Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Whether you are here in person, checking us out online, we just want you to know how incredibly excited we are that you're here as we arrive at the finish line with our fifth and final part of this series that we have been calling Stay Positive. And if you're here for the very first time or just here for the very first time during this particular series, here's what you need to know. You see, the entire premise around this series is ridiculously simple. This entire series revolves around our ability to reframe our thoughts. That as we journey through this life and everything that happens in our time on this earth, that it is an imperative for us to begin to change how we think if we want our futures, our lives to be better. Because deep down, what you and I would be forced to admit is this, is that we don't want a life like everybody else lives. And yet if we want something different from what everybody else has, then we have to think differently than everybody else thinks. And yet here's the holdup. The difficulty with that is that as we look around at the events of our world, and maybe for some of us, even to the present seasons that we're walking through in our life, what we see is that negative is everywhere. Am I right? That as we look out into our world with wars raging and gas prices rising and inflation soaring through the roof and political tension, that all we see every time we hop onto the news or hop onto Yahoo or even scroll through our social media feed is that the world is full of negative events. That as we look into our own lives and the circumstances we're presently journeying through, from the diagnosis that we didn't want to get or the sickness that our mom or our dad has been dealing with, the financial insecurity and hardship that we're dealing with right now and trying to figure out how to get out from under the debt that we've accrued in our life, or maybe the marital issues or the parenting issues that our kids are now grown and they haven't turned out the way we raised them to be. And everywhere we look, all we see is negative. And it's so easy in those moments as we look into our world and we look into our own lives to be laser focused and only see the negative. To only see the bad stuff all around us and to zero in on that and become entrenched in that. And yet in living according to only seeing the negative, what we miss is this. And this is the bottom line that we've come back to that's launched us into every single week of this series. You see, the truth that we miss when we live according to a negative outlook and all we see is negative things around us is that a negative outlook never leads to a positive life. Is that when we find ourselves only looking at the negative, here's what we miss out on. We miss out on the life God designed us to experience. And furthermore, if you want to get more personal than that, we miss out on the life we deeply desire to live for ourselves. The life we want and the futures we desire can't be found right in the back of a negative outlook. And yet time and time again, we find ourselves entrenched in that, doing what comes naturally, doing what feels normal according to what everybody else is talking about, looking at, and entrenched in the negative themselves. And if you're anything like me, as you journey through the negative and you miss out on the life God designed for you and the life that I deeply desire, as we walk through those difficult seasons of our lives, and even in the aftermath of those difficult seasons, what we oftentimes find is this, is that as we walk through difficulty in our lives, that difficulty strips us of our passion, our purpose, and our enthusiasm. That we feel drained, and we ask the question, is this all there is to life, and is this as good as it's going to get? And time and time again, as we only look at the negative, the best part of our lives seem to be mundane and less than, and not what we hoped for when we stood across the altar from that person that we love, not what we hoped for when we held that baby for the very first time, not what we hoped for when we walked into that office building on the first day on the job, or we got our first big boy or big girl paycheck, and we saw those zeros after that number, and we thought for the first time, we're rich, we've got everything we ever wanted, and yet now here we sit, a decade into this journey, or maybe 2 years later after a pandemic has raged, and we feel like we've lost all sense of our purpose. We feel like our passion is gone. We feel like every ounce of enthusiasm that we once held when we were impassioned in our marriage and enjoyed walking into our job is no longer there anymore. And frankly, we keep asking the question that as we walk through a life like this, and all of our passion has been stripped, how do we get it back? How do we change course from where we're headed now and begin to experience something better? You see, what many of you know is that almost every single week as I walk up here on this stage, that I'm not shy about sharing with you all that the roller coasters of life that you often find yourself moving through are the exact same roller coasters that I find myself struggling with as well. That oftentimes I'm vulnerable and transparent in admitting to you the struggles that I have and the struggles that I encounter in full-time ministry. And what some of you may not know is that full-time ministry is not exempt from the constant roller coasters of life. And for me, there are constantly moments where I feel up and I feel like I have passion and enthusiasm and a purpose. And yet doing this, there are also moments where I feel like I've lost that. Where I'm going through the exact same struggles as you and asking the exact same questions that you're asking. About 10 or 11 years ago is the very first time that I really started to feel this tug on my heart towards lead pastor, towards leading an organization, towards leading a congregation. And hear me on this, 10 or 11 years ago, I was already in full-time ministry. I had already had that calling, knew that's what I was supposed to do since I was a sophomore in high school. And so it wasn't that. But up until that point, about 10 or 11 years ago, what I recognized about myself is this. Is that in my calling to full-time ministry, one of the things I never want to do is step into a role in which I am subject to walking up and speaking in front of people on a regular basis. Ha ha, right? Because what I recognized about myself at that point in my life is that every time I was subject to public speaking, there was this fear and this anxiety and nerves that began to rise up inside of me. And I felt like puking every single time I had to do it. And it was like, that is not what I want to sign up for in my life. But they began to give me opportunities at the place I worked at before CORE, the only other place I've ever done full-time ministry. They began to give me some opportunities to do public speaking on a semi-regular basis. And as I got those opportunities, it began to instill this passion inside of me that was derived from this one place. Every single time I walked up on stage, the more opportunities they gave me to this day, I still experience that exact same anxiety and those nerves and that feeling inside of me like I want to throw up and do I really have to do this again? And yet what I also experienced in the aftermath of those moments when I was given those opportunities is that in the moments in which my messages connected with people and I thought, man, that was delivered better than what I thought it ever could have been delivered, what it forced me to acknowledge was this. Is that in those successes, Ben, in seeing your shortcomings and your inadequacies, the only reason that it connected with people had nothing to do with anything outside of your willingness and everything to do with me. Your heavenly Father that you've been leaning into because you recognized that you couldn't do this on your own and you were full of nerves and you didn't know how to say everything the way it was supposed to be said to connect with people's hearts and their lives and their futures and the hope that only I can bring. And time again, as it forced me to lean in, there was this passion that was stoked inside of me because time and time again, it wasn't about me. It was about leaning in to a greater source of that passion and that enthusiasm in my life. And we fast forward 10 or 11 years to when they gave me an opportunity and they promoted me and said, okay, we're putting you on a campus pastor track. We see this passion that you have inside of you. We believe that you're capable of leading an organization at some point. And so we want to give you more opportunities to speak in front of large groups of people on stage on a Sunday morning and doing the hosting duty and doing campus-specific speaking engagements. And at that time, there was so much passion. And I had an opportunity then to come back home and take a position here at CORE. And yet in spite of all of that and what I just told you, what I also readily admit is this, is that oftentimes in my present state of ministry, oftentimes I find myself approaching the weekend with things like this rolling through my mind. What would it be like to have a normal weekend like everybody else? For me to live a life in which Saturday morning at 8 o'clock or at 9 o'clock, those anxieties and fears and worries and inadequacies didn't start rising up in me again. Do I really have to speak again? Do I really have to do this? Is there anything else in this world that I could do? And oftentimes, as I find myself battling those things and asking those questions, what I'm also forced to confront is this. Is, Ben, do you realize that the very same things you're complaining about are the things you prayed for? But the very same things that you're complaining about were the very same things that just years ago you were on your knees asking me for, praying for. And yet you've become so entrenched in the negative and the difficulty that all you see in the negative is the negative from the blessing that I've given you. And you see, in the aftermath of realizing that time and time again in my life and in my story and the draining of my passion and my enthusiasm and my purpose, what I've realized is that in this world there are two distinct kinds of people. Two types of people, and what I want to challenge you to this morning is this. Is that as I introduce you to these two types of people in our world, for you to ask the question, which one are you? Which type do you fall into in your time here on this earth? You see, the first type of person is those who allow their circumstances to dictate their enthusiasm. Those who allow the things that they're walking through, the circumstances of their life, the circumstances of their world, the things that are outside of them to dictate what's going on inside of them. You see, oftentimes, if you're anything like me, this is the category, this is the type of person that I often classify as. That it's so easy for me to allow my circumstances and the circumstances of the world to dictate what's happening on the inside. But there's a second type of person. A second type of person that is so absolutely incredible in their ability to use their enthusiasm to influence their circumstances. You see, these type of people are the type of people who know that what's happening inside of them, what's been done inside of them, has the ability, if used correctly, to influence the world outside of them, the world around them. These are the people who, because of the passion that's been placed inside of them and the healing power that God has worked in their life, has the ability to begin to change the world. One interaction, one workplace, one family conversation, one across the fence conversation with their neighbor at a time. Because they're not influenced by the circumstances of the world outside of them. They influence the world outside of them by the enthusiasm that's happening inside of them. You see, the question is this. Do you really want to continue to live a life in which what's happening inside of you is controlled by all the junk that's happening outside of you? Or would you rather find a way to live a life in which you become a person who has the ability to influence the world around you because of what you already have in you? You see, I think I can guess what almost every single one of our answers would be. We would all say we desire to be person number two. And yet the problem with that is this. Is that for many of us, what's inside of us has been dictated by what's going on outside of us for so long that the two kind of look the same at this point. That what's inside of me and what's outside of me in the world kind of looks almost identical at this point that I can't even tell the two apart. And so where do we even begin? How do we get that enthusiasm inside of us to begin to look different than the rest of the world around us? How do we begin to grow that passion and that purpose and that enthusiasm again that maybe we look back 2 years ago and we acknowledge, I once had that, I was once on fire, I once saw great things, and yet here I sit now and all of that has changed. All of that has gone out the window. You see, the reality is that in our lives, oftentimes where we make a mistake in this pursuit of wanting our inside to change, this passion, this enthusiasm to grow again, oftentimes, if you're anything like me, we begin to believe that the solution to that is to go searching for something new outside of us to engage in. We believe that the reason we have lost passion is because I'm doing something that I'm not passionate about. And so in order to regain my passion, I just need to start doing different things. I need to go find a different job. I need to go start engaging in different stuff. Find what I'm passionate about, explore out there, and then that'll recreate the passion in me. But here's the kicker, is that with our lives, when we believe that lie, that the key to our passion and our enthusiasm lies solely in finding the right things to do, we find ourselves living lives that are on a quest towards something unattainable. That the things we do with our lives in this world will never sustainably hold the passion and the enthusiasm that we have been called to have. And you're saying this, well then Ben, where do we get it from? I don't even know where to start. And you see, it's simple. The passion and the enthusiasm that we desire to regain in our lives, in our journeys, and that God desires for your life and your future because he loves you and wants the best for you, finding that passion can be found when we simply do an easy language lesson. You see, the language lesson is this. Do you realize that the English word enthusiasm was actually derived from one Greek phrase? And that Greek phrase, you're going to hear the similarities between these two. The English word enthusiasm was derived from the Greek phrase entheos, entheosism. You hear it? And this Greek phrase, entheos, is literally defined as in God or to be filled by God. This simple language lesson reveals this truth that we so often overlook. It's that as humanity, our passion, our enthusiasm, isn't something that I'm born with that relies on performing a specific task. Our enthusiasm, our passion, it's not even something that I can manufacture. No. What it begins to reveal is this, is that in our lives, getting our passion, our purpose, our enthusiasm back that we were called to have isn't about something we're born with, isn't about something we're accomplishing, isn't about something we manufacture. Our passion is about the posture of our hearts. Did you catch that? The passion and enthusiasm that we crave is about the posture of our hearts. It's something cultivated directly from our time with God and theos, to be in God and to be filled by God, being in the presence of him. And Paul gives us this incredible insight into what we can rely on in our lives, what we can begin to look at, because this series is all about reframing our thoughts, reframing our minds, to begin to look at different things than everybody else is looking at, what we can look at to begin to stoke that passion, purpose, and enthusiasm inside of us. He does so in his first letter to the church in Corinth. In chapter 15, verse 57, if you haven't done so already, it's an incredible opportunity for you to crack open your weekly. There's a notes page in there that'll help you follow along as we move through the text. But here is what Paul writes. But thank God, he gives us victory over sin and death through our Lord Jesus Christ. Now, this first phrase here, this first sentence in there, is imperative to this passage. Because Paul's about to start talking about how we should live enthusiastically and work enthusiastically at everything we do. And he's setting the table for that because he's saying the enthusiasm that you have been called to live with in your life, the difference you've been called to make on the world outside of you, can only be derived when you constantly set your mind on this truth. That we have a God who has given us victory over sin and death. And let me just give you the umbrella version. Paul identifies the two biggest things. You know what that means? The umbrella version means he gives you the two biggest things because it encompasses everything else. He has given us victory over every possible thing we could encounter in our time on earth through our Lord Jesus Christ. And when we focus our minds on that, then he continues, so my dear brothers and sisters, now you're capable of being strong and immovable. Always work enthusiastically for the Lord. And he finishes it in this great way. For you know that nothing you do for the Lord is ever useless. For you know that nothing you ever do for the Lord is useless. is without purpose, is without a needed enthusiasm, passion in your life. You see, Paul uncovers something that has the power to unleash something inside of you that could change the trajectory of your life for forever. You see, in this one passage, this is what Paul uncovers. He uncovers that it's not what you do that makes it meaningful. It's who you do it for. That it's not what you do that provides passion and enthusiasm. It's who you do it for. And I know what y'all are thinking. You're like, Ben, yeah, that's really easy. That's religious speak right there. It's really easy for some pastor to walk up on the stage and begin to talk to us about how our lives are better if we start doing stuff for God. But Ben, that doesn't really relate to real life. No? Come on, y'all. How many of you guys are married? That isn't the way relationships within your marriage work. Maybe your marriage is different than mine, but here's how it works within my marriage, y'all. You know that left side of your sink that has all the things that are really too big to fit in the dishwasher? And that left side is constantly overflowing? Or as you go, like my family, from a family of two to a family of four within the matter of an afternoon, it's like, my, oh my, I didn't know laundry could be like this, right? Like my wife and I, we always laugh because our oldest, like we put clothes on him in the morning, obviously, and then he takes a nap in the afternoon. He gets up from the nap and he gets into his drawer. He's like, I'm not putting on the stuff you put on me this morning. I'm getting completely new stuff out. I was like, this is the reason why the laundry basket is constantly overflowing. But what I know about myself, y'all, is this, and I'm willing to admit this. There is absolutely zero passion and enthusiasm that lives inside of me about cleaning out the left side of the sink. Am I right? Anybody else with me? There is absolutely zero passion, zero enthusiasm for me in that overflowing basket of clothes on Friday when I'm at home with the boys, my wife is finishing up her work week with a crazy busy day and 27 second graders in her classroom. There is absolutely zero passion, zero desire for me to spend time going through and folding all of the clothes for the four of us. But there is this reality that my passion and my enthusiasm for completing those tasks changes when I take my eyes off of the task that is to be completed and I focus my attention on who I'm completing the task for. That it is an opportunity for me to show care to the woman that I love. It is an opportunity for me to step forward and do something for the person that I'm passionate about. And it's an opportunity for me to take something off of her plate that she didn't have to come in and see. That's a mess again. They left all their dirty dishes in the sink again. Ben was only thinking about himself again. Or here I've gone through a crazy busy week, and there's the overpiled clothes in the laundry basket that nothing's been done. And I guess it's me again. And it's an opportunity for me to do something that takes something off of her plate. And you see, if you're a Christ follower, that exact same thing rings true in our relationship with Jesus. That it isn't about what I do as much as it is about who I'm doing it for that begins to stoke this passion and enthusiasm inside of me. This should be true in our walk with Jesus. Because here's the reality, y'all. We will all be there if we haven't already been there a million times before. You will not always be passionate about walking in on Sunday morning and rocking babies. You will not always be passionate about walking in and running the slide so that everybody else knows the words to be able to sing along and worship God in the moment. You won't always be passionate about having to stand out in the middle of winter and be the first greeter in the parking lot as people walk in and it's snowing and 15 degrees to make a connection with someone and to make them feel welcome before they even walk in the doors of a church. You may not always feel passionate about playing an instrument, but it's not about what you do that makes it meaningful. It's not about what you do
that creates that passion in you. It's about who you're doing it for. Because I know it serves the one I love. Because I know it helps spread the name of the one I'm passionate about. Because I know no matter what you're doing, when we begin to do it for God, it changes the mundane into the meaningful. When we begin to look at what we do, not as the task that we're completing, but we begin to see who we're doing it for, we begin to see what was once mundane now as meaningful in our lives. And let me just say this, if you've been coming to CORE for 9 months or more, and you haven't picked a black card out of the seat pocket in front of you and looked at that and prayed about that and filled it out and dropped it into a box in the back, after hearing that, maybe now is your time. You see, at about the same time frame that I was telling you about before, back at my time at New Point, with that promotion and those new responsibilities, they ended up moving me to a campus. And they gave me the responsibility of overseeing everything from birth to graduation at that particular campus. As I walked into this position, we entered into a season in which we were just exploding. And we were bursting at the seams in our auditorium. We were bursting at the seams in every kid's environment. So we were adding environments and trying to come up with new volunteers to add to the team so that we could serve people well and offer everything we wanted to offer in order for people to encounter Christ in an incredible way and to make heaven more crowded. And as we were going through this process, and it was the very first time in my life where I had been a part of overseeing kidmen, no easy task, one of the largest volunteer teams in the entire church. And we were trying to add teams, and we were trying to fill holes. And as we were going through this entire process, there was this lady who had been serving in our nursery. She was probably in her lower 80s at the time. And she was serving a couple times a month at just rocking babies and picking babies up. And as we were going through this season, she approached me and she said, "Ben, I just want you to know that I see all that you're trying to do, all that's happening around here. We're bursting at the seams. You're trying to fill teams. You're trying to plug holes. And we're short right now. And so here's what I want you to know, that I'm willing to start serving every single week in the nursery." And I looked at this lady in her lower 80s. And what I began to imagine was this. Like, Monday morning cannot feel good to you the couple times that you serve. Like, having to pick up these chunky babies and sit there and rock them until your arm goes numb so that they feel comforted. And I looked at her and I said, no, you don't want to do that. You don't have to do that. And she looked back at me and she said, "Ben, yes, I do. Because you're right, it doesn't always feel good on Monday morning, physically. But I want to do this because I love Jesus too much not to. And I love the mission too much not to. And if it takes me feeling crappy on Monday morning for a single mother to be able to walk in and drop off her baby and have somebody rock her baby for an hour so that she can encounter Jesus in a new and incredible way for her life and the hope of her future, then I'm willing to do that as much as it takes in order for that to be a part of the story written here at New Point." And y'all, let me just tell you this. I try not to get too emotional about this. In my time in full-time ministry, I've learned from a lot of people who are smarter than me, further up on the organizational ladder than me, 30 steps ahead of me. But I'm not sure that there has been more that shaped my ministry and the outlook of what full-time ministry should look like in my life than that one conversation with that 80-some-year-old woman. To begin to reset my focus and my priorities and what I'm looking at, to stoke my passion and my enthusiasm in the moments where I've lost it, then reminding myself, it's not about what I do, it's about focusing on who I'm doing it for. And when I focus on who I'm doing it for, there then becomes no lack of me wanting to do it more. Hello. Y'all okay? See, throughout this series, we've been focusing on this guy by the name of David. David was the king of Israel, and at his time, he was one of, if not the most powerful men in all the world. And yet the beginning of David's story didn't start like that. It didn't contain a part of his story that looked like it was trending in that direction. You see, David was the youngest and lowliest of his family. When a man by the name of Samuel walked into their house to pick the next king of Israel, they didn't even bring David in from the field. Because their thought was, man, he's too young, he's too weak, there is no way he could possibly be the next king of Israel. And yet from that moment, on which the circumstances of his life seemed to dictate where he was headed and what his future held, from that point forward, David's passion, confidence, and enthusiasm grew to one that culminated in a moment in front of a giant by the name of Goliath. You see, there came a day where David, still as a lowly shepherd, simply on a mission to deliver lunch to his brothers who were out on the battlefield, walked onto a battlefield and saw a giant by the name of Goliath standing there taunting the army of Israel. And David knew, hanging in the balance, was not just their pride, was the future of a nation. That if this man defeated the warrior that stepped up against him, the Israelites would become slaves to the Philistines. And in a moment when all of this was transpiring around him, the passion and the enthusiasm and the confidence sprang forth in David in this one culminating moment that we find in 1 Samuel chapter 17. David replied to the Philistine, "You come to me with sword, spear, and javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of heaven's armies, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. Today the Lord will conquer you, and I will kill you and cut off your head. And then I will give the dead bodies of your men to the birds and wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God." See, I don't know if you caught it within that passage, but we see this common theme reverberating in every statement of passion and enthusiasm that David makes. His passion, his enthusiasm, his confidence was not derived from anything he had done, from any accomplishment he had had. He was still a shepherd boy that no one knew was to be the next king of Israel. No, David's passion, David's enthusiasm was derived from one place. Did you see? After every statement that David made of confidence in this passage, do you know what he said? Something along the lines of, "This is who my God is. This is how powerful my God is. On this day, everybody will know who my God is and how big he is. You come to me with sword and javelin and spear. I come to you with the only thing that's actually meaningful, the name of my Father in heaven." That's how big he is. That's how powerful he is. And his passion rose from that place. You see, what we learn in this moment from David is that the passion and enthusiasm we crave can be cultivated in our lives moving forward with three easy steps. That's it, y'all. Three easy steps to build back our passion, our confidence, our purpose in this life that somewhere along the way we've lost. Step number one, what we see from David is that his passion, his confidence was derived from his ability to trust in God daily. This reverberated throughout David's entire story. As a shepherd boy, maybe some of us don't exactly know what that entails, but as the guarder of sheep, David was tasked with the assignment of being out in the field, and any wild animal that would attempt to attack his flock, he had to fend off. And there are actually stories of David being able to fend off wild bears. That David trusted in God to deliver him from those moments. He trusted in God coming face to face with a giant that was 3 feet, 4 feet taller than David was at the time. He trusted God was going to come through for him. And the time after time as a king, when he was called onto the battlefield to fight enemies that were bigger, stronger, better than his army was, David found a way to trust God daily. David found a way to walk with God daily. That he knew in every moment of his life that in order to receive what he needed the guidance that he needed. Hearing God's voice could only be done when in close proximity to the source. And so he walked with God daily. And third, he knew the importance of worshiping God daily. This was the same dude who was chastised by his wife because he was worshiping so exuberantly in a way no one else had ever seen. David was capable of worshiping his God like nobody else worshiped. As they were carrying the Ark of the Covenant into the capital city of their nation, David was the guy who ran out there in front of the ark. They believed that's where God's presence was at the time. And he began to dance, and he began to sing, and he began to worship around the clanging of drums and the blaring of horns. Contemporary worship? Sorry. But it was worship that hadn't been done before, and David was setting the bar for it. David was going all out. And you see, in each of these three simple steps, there's a thread that weaves through all of them. It's the last word. I don't know if you caught it. That David was willing, in order to get his passion, his purpose back in his life, to do these things daily. 2,000 years later, you know what that means? It means that in order for us to live passionate, purpose-filled, enthusiastic lives that aren't influenced by the world outside of us, but that we, because of what's inside of us, influence the world out there. In order for us to be capable of doing that, this can't become a one-stop shop. That passion and purpose weren't simply things that were derived by checking the box of walking into a church once a week. Hang on, y'all. Hear me on this, because I want you to come back next week. This was simply meant to be a great launching pad. This was meant to be a great launching pad for what it looked like to trust God on Monday, to walk with God on Tuesday, to worship God on Wednesday, to trust God on Thursday, to walk with God on Friday, to worship God on Saturday. That in order for us to live lives filled with passion and purpose and enthusiasm, it can't be about, man, I just checked the box. I got that in my once this month, and that's good. Because you know what that leads to? That leads to 6-9 months down the road. I tried that, and I'm still not any more passionate. I don't have any more purpose, so I guess that's not the answer. You're right. This was never meant to be the complete answer. This was meant to be one of seven parts of the answer. Hello. This was meant to be a day in the practice of daily. Because if we want something different, we have to be willing to do different things. You see, in Psalm 23, and I put it in there just for y'all's reference, David understood that. That even though I walk through the darkest valleys, God walks with me. That the Lord is my shepherd. I have everything that I could ever want. He guides me. He protects me. He leads me. You know how David knew all of those things? That if you grew up in church, man, you know Psalm 23. You've seen it on blankets, right? You've seen it on everything. You know this stuff. You know how David knew this to be true? Because daily, he trusted God. Daily, he walked with God. Daily, he worshiped God. And yet what we also know about David is that he's the poster child for both sides of the coin. Because so much of David's life, he was a man after God's heart. He was living with passion and purpose and enthusiasm. But then there was a season of David's life in which he lost it all. He went through circumstances, made decisions in which it evaporated in the wind, much like you and I have experienced. We find that moment in a story that begins like this. At that time, when David was supposed to be off at war, David was supposed to be doing something that he was called to do, and he chose to do something different. He chose to stay back home, and in staying back home, one night he decided to go for a stroll on the rooftop of his palace. And in this walk on the rooftop of his palace, he looked over his kingdom and saw all the rooftops that were below his palace. And what did he see as he looked out? He saw a beautiful woman. And in seeing this beautiful woman that he wanted as the most powerful man in the world, he did what he had the right to do. He took her. And in taking her, the cover-up was on. Because he got this woman pregnant. And so he tried to cover it up. And the cover-up didn't work. And when the cover-up didn't work, he had to take the next step and he had to have her husband killed. And in the aftermath of those decisions and the consequences that came with it, David's passion and his purpose and his enthusiasm dried up in an instant. Because in a moment, David chose to do something he wasn't supposed to do. And in turn, he saw something he wasn't supposed to see. And he manipulated people he wasn't supposed to manipulate. And because of that, he cost a lot of people things they were never meant to lose. The passion and the enthusiasm was gone. Why? Because we see two different stories being written. You see, the first story was this. With enthusiasm, David ran onto the battlefield to serve his God. That's where his eyes were. That's where his mind was. That's where he was focusing, on his time with God, on his service for God. And he had enthusiasm to even run face first into the battles of life. But on the other side of the coin, with apathy, David walked on the roof to serve his own comfort. He lost all of his passion, enthusiasm, and purpose in life when he took his eyes off of his calling and placed his eyes onto his comfort. And y'all, here's the good news and the bad news. Every day of our lives, we have that exact same choice. And that choice is accentuated when we go through difficult seasons. Because when things are extremely difficult, we tend as human beings to fall into one of two extremes. For some of us, we do an incredible job of falling into extreme number one. And that is, as we journey through incredibly difficult times, we make this decision. That these are the moments of my life where I'm capable of realizing I need God now more than ever. Like, I'm lost, I don't know how to fix this, I need his guidance, and the only way I'm going to get it is if I get into his presence. And in those moments where we're broken and we're hurt, we find some uncanny ability to lean in it even more. But the unfortunate, tragic part is that oftentimes we find ourselves sliding into the second extreme. You see, the second extreme aligns with our human nature. And if your human nature is anything like mine, in the moments of difficulty, we find ourselves drifting, just trying to keep our head above water, trying to experiment to find any answer that will work. And what I know about every single one of our human natures is this: our human nature doesn't drift towards healthy choices. Our human nature doesn't drift towards discipline. No. Our human nature drifts towards things like comfort and what comes natural and what looks easy on the surface. My human nature drifts towards selfishness. My human nature drifts towards fear and protection and doubt. And even in the midst of all of this, when I'm looking at the negative, my human nature drifts towards a loss of joy in every task that I'm completing. What happens is what was once a passionate calling from God has now become settling for comfort and complacency. That we drift into what feels comfortable and what looks easy instead of searching for what brings passion and enthusiasm and purpose to all lives, our futures, our marriages, our jobs, our parenting. And when David realized that he had drifted into extreme number two, this was the prayer that David prayed. In Psalm chapter 51, David prayed this: "Create in me a clean heart, O God. Renew a loyal spirit within me. Restore to me the joy of your salvation and make me willing to obey you." Create in me a clean heart. Renew me, restore me, and make me willing to do the things that I knew at one time I was being called to do. You see, what David was saying here is this, is that when we lose our passion, We go back to what provided it in the first place. It's why Jesus has this to say to believers like you and me in Revelation chapter 2, verse 4. But I have this complaint against you, Ben. In this season, you don't love me or each other as you did at first. Look how far you have fallen. But the solution is easy. You want it back? This is how Jesus finishes. Turn back to me. Just turn around. Go in a new direction. And do the works you did at first. You know what Jesus is saying? In those moments where it feels like you've lost your purpose and your passion and your enthusiasm in life, you actually didn't lose it. You chose to leave it. You walked away from the only source who could give you it. The only source who provides it in such a way that it's sustainable and it lasts through your life. And so when you've walked away from the source, what do? You get back to trusting his goodness daily. You walk with him daily. You worship him daily. Because there are two types of people in this world. Those who allow their circumstances to dictate their enthusiasm, or those who use their enthusiasm to influence their circumstances. Which one do you want to be? If you've chosen the opposite one and you've lost your passion, the good news is it's not too late to get it back. You can still do it today. But it doesn't change by changing what you do. It changes by changing what you're looking at. And looking at who you're doing it for. Would you pray with me? Father, this morning, God, we thank you for being a God who is all truth and all grace. That sometimes, dependent upon where we are in life and the season that we're walking through, these things are difficult to swallow. And sometimes it feels like we're a punching bag. And we've lost our passion, we've lost our purpose, we've lost our enthusiasm. And it's because we left it. We walked away from it. We walked away from you, God. We started thinking the solution was to just change what we're doing instead of just keep looking at who we're doing it for. You're a God who also operates with absolute grace. And you look at us where we're at. And with compassion, you say, I know you've fallen off the horse. I know life's not going the way you wanted it to go. I know you've made some mistakes. But in the same breath, you reach out your hand and you offer to pick us back up and to help us regain that passion and that purpose and that enthusiasm that gives us the potential to change the world outside of us instead of us being changed by that world. So God, today, and we want that. We want something better than what we're presently experiencing. We want the passion back. We want the purpose back. We want the enthusiasm back. But God, help us to have the courage to get back to a place where we're willing to trust you daily. Walk with you daily. Worship you daily. And when we do, that's when this passion that we've been searching for and this passion that the world desperately needs us to have becomes restored. We thank you for that. It's in your name that I pray. Amen.